Okay, this is Professor Tufano, and I'll be talking about Chapter 12, Using Words Well, Speaker, Language, and Style. I'm on page 205 in the textbook Public Speaking Handbook, 6th edition. Okay, so I think I should be able to make it through this chapter in around 30 minutes. I'm trying to keep these audios to around 30 minutes. So the learning objectives here, it says describe the three differences between oral and written language styles. Secondly, list and explain three ways to use words effectively. Third, discuss how to adapt your language style to listeners. And fourth, listen and explain three types of memorable word structures. And then the outline for the chapter, there's 4 points. 1, differentiating oral and written language styles. 2, using words effectively. 3, adapting your language style to your listeners. And then 4, crafting memorable word structures. So that is a little bit of an introduction to Chapter 12, and it starts on page 205, and it ends on page 219, which is the study guide. Okay, so differentiating oral and written styles. So it says here that there are three differences between oral and written style. So the differences between writing and speaking, you could say it that way too. So what are the differences when you're communicating in writing versus speaking? And then also consider the differences between not only writing and speaking, but interpersonally communicating or speaking versus public speaking. So certainly writing has a much different style than even interpersonal communication between two people. But in this case, the differentiating is between public speaking style versus writing or written language. So oral style is more personal than written, oral style is less formal than written, and oral style is more repetitive than written style. Okay, so oral style is more personal than written style. When speaking, you can look at your listeners in the eye and talk to them directly. That personal contact affects your speech and your verbal style. As a speaker, you're more likely to use more pronouns, I and you, rather than you would in writing. Well, it depends. You could write in first person or third person, depending upon what English class you take. Some professors prefer third person, some prefer first person. I prefer first person, singular, ideally, in writing. You're also more likely to address specific audience members by name. So anytime that you communicate, you're communicating to a specific audience. So if you're writing, who are you writing to? So you have to know that. So if it's a college course, you're probably writing to a professor. If it's, in this case, a speech class, you're speaking to a group of students. So depending upon when you're listening to this, you could be producing your speeches online or through Zoom or through a YouTube video, or it could be live in person speaking. Okay, next, oral style is less formal than written style. Memorized speeches usually sound as if they were written because the words and phrases are longer, more complex, and more formal than used by most speakers. And that's true. In fact, when students are performing their speeches live in class, and I usually sit in the back of the classroom, and the student obviously is in the front, usually at a lectern or somewhere up front, and they're facing their audience and communicating, speaking, presenting. And oftentimes, as I'm completing the grading on the speech evaluation form, as I look down and I'm writing and I'm listening, I could almost always know if a student is reading something that was pre-written or they're presenting extemporaneous from some notes. There is a big difference. Public speeches should be presented extemporaneous from notes, not read directly from something that has been written out in long form. And in some cases, students will do a little bit of both, and that may work fine. But the more time you spend looking up at your audience and the less time that you spend reading directly from a prepared statement, the more natural that presentation will feel. And I also would argue that you'll be more effective and your audience will have a greater confidence in the message that you're communicating. Okay, so oral style is less formal than written style. It says here, oral style, on one hand, is characterized by, as compared to written style, as looser construction, repetitive, rephrasing, and a lot of comment clauses. And one comment clauses that they list here is like, you know, that's a comment clause. So oral style is less formal than written style. True. The third difference, oral style is more repetitive than written style, which if you're going to reinforce a point in a oral presentation, you will be redundant and repeat certain phrases and or words. It's actually a pretty effective technique to help audiences remember the things that you're speaking about. But obviously, if you wrote the same word three or four times or the same phrase three or four times, it would be inappropriate and would be grammatically incorrect in regarding a written style. So it says, when you don't understand something that you are reading in a book or an article, you could stop and reread the passage, look up unfamiliar words in a dictionary, or ask someone for help. When you're listening to a speech, those opportunities are not available. So for that reason, oral style should and would be more repetitive. Kind of makes sense. Trying to get your audience to remember being redundant is an effective technique. Using words effectively. It says here, list and explain three ways to use words effectively. One, use specific concrete words. Two, use simple words. And three, use words correctly. I am a proponent of clarity in speaking. So I would encourage you to be clear in your message. You don't need to be tricky or sophisticated. Just be simple and clear. And one way to use words effectively, it says, use specific concrete words. So here's an example. If you were to describe a pet snake to an audience, you would need to do more than say it's a serpent. Instead, you would want to use the most specific term possible in describing your snake as a ball python, or if you were speaking to an audience of scientists, you may use the Latin phrase python regigis. So a specific word or term such as a ball python refers to an individual member of a class of more general things such as a serpent or a snake. You can also use the example on that abstract ladder on figure 12.2 on page 208, which is interesting. So the abstract ladder, it says the words at the top of this ladder are more abstract. Words become more concrete as you move down. So abstract, as an example, I just got a new animal. Well, what kind of animal is it? Oh, it's a mammal. Well, what kind of mammal is it? It's a dog. Well, what kind of dog is it? It's a Australian cattle dog. Oh, and what is the sex of the cattle dog? Female. And how old is the dog? Oh, a year old. And so if you just told your friend, hey, I just got an animal, that would be an example of an abstraction. If you said, I got a new animal, it's a dog, and it's a Australian cattle dog, and it's female, and it's a year and a half, you could see how, as you described that animal with more clarity in a more concrete term, there's less confusion about what is it that you just got. So if you just got an animal, of course, there could be many different kinds of animals. The book refers to a mammal or you know, marsupial, I don't know. But you could see where, when you're using specific concrete words, it's going to help your audience to understand the message by making it more clear. Use simple words. The best language is often the simplest. Your words should be immediately understood to your listeners. Do not try to impress them with jargon or pompous wording. I like that, pompous wording. So you don't have to sound sophisticated. Sometimes students will make the mistake of trying to use all sorts of interesting adjectives to make their words or their ideas seem more sophisticated. You don't need to do that. Use simple words. Use words correctly. A public speech is not a place to demonstrate your lack of familiarity with English vocabulary or grammar. In fact, your effectiveness with your audience depends in part on your ability to use language correctly. That's a good point. They talk about language operates on two levels. Perhaps the greatest challenge to using words correctly is remaining aware of connotation and denotation. Denotation of a word is the literal meaning of it, the definition that's found in a dictionary typically. Connotation of a word is not usually found in a dictionary, but consists of the meaning we associate with a word based upon our experiences. Sometimes connotations are personal. For example, the word table is defined denotatively as a piece of furniture consisting of a smooth, flat slab affixed to legs. But the word table may evoke for you an image of your family's oak table where you once played checkers with your grandmother. The image is a personal connotation of the word, a unique meaning based upon your past experience. Personal meanings are difficult to predict, but as a public speaker, you should be aware of the possibility of triggering an audience member's private connotation of a word that you use. So that is an interesting point there. Use words concisely. So concisely and clearly are two of my favorite ideas or descriptions for a public speaker. You are precise and you are concise, and you should strive to be precise and concise. So here, concise does not necessarily mean short, rather it means succinct or to the point. Research suggests that people who use fewer words are perceived by listeners as more powerful or credible, a perception that may be especially helpful to persuasive speakers. And I would concur with this point. So if you can use less words to make a point, it does appear that that individual speaker, and it could be something in writing, has a grasp of language, an excellent grasp of language, and also uses that more effectively. So I would spend a little bit more time understanding that. It says, in other words, your goal should be to use only as many words as necessary to convey your message. So they have a couple of phrases here that I think are interesting. It says, here are some phrases that you can eliminate from your speech. In my opinion, just state your opinion. Now, for the first two speeches, you should not say, in my opinion, at all. And for the last two speeches, it's okay to say, in my opinion. I probably would only use that phrase once or twice, probably not more than that, because for persuasive speaking, you want to rely on other experts' experiences and wisdom and opinions, not your own. So you want to refer to other experts. And so by saying it's my opinion, it may weaken your case. It may not strengthen it, or it may weaken it. Because if you have very little experience with a topic, by saying it in my opinion, that's not going to help. You really want to have people who have a lot of experience and wisdom in those areas. When all is said and done, just say it. As a matter of fact, just state the fact. Before I begin, I'd like to say, just begin. You could see where to remove those phrases, I think, would be very helpful. Avoid a long phrase when a short one will do. So instead of saying, so for that reason, just say so. So instead of saying, but at the same time, just say but. Instead of saying, in the final analysis, just say finally. Those are some interesting ways to consider shortening your phrases. All right, adapting your language to your listeners. Use language that your audience can understand. Well, that just kind of makes sense. Use language that your audience can understand. So you've probably done some audience analysis. You've done some demographic analysis, some psychological analysis, some situational analysis. And you know something about your audience, at least the gender, sex, and or the age, approximate age. But if you can know more, great. So to starting at that point, those kind of simple, that simple knowledge of an audience, make sure that your audience can understand the language that you speak. So in most cases, it would be English, and most of your audience members will understand English at least to they'll have a basic understanding of English, and some more advanced, of course. Most will. But then when it comes to jargon or slang and those kind of styles of language, just be aware that try not to use a lot of slang, a lot of jargon. Use some typically we would speak in a more formal sense when we're speaking to an audience, a public audience. Use language that they argue is respectful. And again, these are some really difficult things to define. And so I don't have a great definition of what respectful language is. I think as a speaker, you're going to have to try your best to understand the sensitivities of your audience and try to not work against them. And there's so many things that I could say about this, but at least in this chapter, I'm going to limit what I'm going to say to just a few points. But the idea of using respectful language, they use an example that in the textbook on page 212, I'm not so sure it's a really good example. But anytime you're a public speaker, do the best you can to use language that will not offend deeply your audience to the point where they'll tune out or they'll just dismiss the things that you say. But again, these are some subjective ideas, and so it's hard as someone who teaches it to say something really concrete and specific about it, because these ideas are, like the idea of respectful language is so subjective that it'd be really hard to come up with some objective ways to even say what that means. So I would just say do the best you can to understand the particular sensitivities of the audience at the time you speak and within the topic that you speak. Just do that. The example that they use in the book, I don't find very reliable, at least for that section. And then it says use unbiased language, and that's impossible, because anytime a public speaker speaks, you speak from your perspective, you speak from your bias, and so it's impossible to use unbiased language. It's just no one has unbiased language. Again, it has to do with the sensitivities of your audience and doing the best you can to be sensitive to that particular audience and use words, phrases, and terms that will ultimately be effective, whatever your goal is, to inform or persuade or to entertain. So knowing what your goal is and knowing your audience will allow you in these subjective areas to kind of make some adjustments so that the words and phrases and terms that you use ultimately won't create barriers between you and your listeners, because ultimately if you're trying to be effective, that won't help you. Okay, crafting memorable word structures on 213. And on 214, there is a really good table, 12.1, and then on page 215, table 2.2, and actually table 2.3. So I would spend some time looking at these. It says, creating figurative images. One way to make your message memorable is to use figurative language to create arresting images. Figurative language deviates from the ordinary expected meaning of words to make a description or comparison unique, vivid, and memorable. So common figurative language includes metaphors, similes, and personification. And it's simple just to kind of look at these tables, 12.2, 12.1. 12.2 is about creating drama, how you do that. Creating cadence. Cadence is the rhythm of the speech. A good speech certainly has a certain cadence or rhythm, and it has a natural progression of time, and it has a natural beginning, middle, and end for sure. So take a look at those tables. Analyzing an example of memorable word structure, and they use bits and pieces of a speech by John F. Kennedy. And one quote that you hear often from John F. Kennedy in his inaugural address, he says, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. And that has been memorable and continues to be used. It said Kennedy used figurative imagery, drama, and cadence to give his inaugural address the eye and ear appeal and make it memorable, not just to those who heard it initially, but again, it's been more than 50 years, so that's kind of interesting. So how would you love to be able to present a speech that is remembered 50 years later? That's awesome. All right, it's kind of a short chapter, and that is my overview or highlights of the chapter. Make sure that you read the entire chapter, and then if you have any questions, you can then bring them to class. Page 218, 219, study guide. Look at the terms. All these study guides, you should always look at the terms, try to memorize the terms, try to understand the terms. You can go back in the chapter and look them up if you're a little unsure, and then also take a look at the think about questions, because obviously I could be using these questions for quiz questions, so you should be able to know them. Okay, it's kind of a short chapter, but that was chapter 12, and this is Professor Tufano out, Public Speaking Handbook, and that was chapter 12.